you had to put words on it, how would you express it?
Shall I begin?
I think we're in the middle.
We are. So, I'm Ed, and it has been hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas, I think, since I spoke here, although really it was only a little over a year ago. And I thought what I would do besides sit in silence, was to talk about the shadow, or a shadow, that comes with giving. And I thought I'd introduce that with one of my favorite lyrics. It goes, "Blow, blow, thou winter wind, thou art not so unkind as man's ingratitude." Before I moved out to California 5 years ago, I worked as a librarian at Tufts University, and I had what was probably the best job in the world for someone who loved to buy books. The university would take vast amounts of money and pour them into an account, and my responsibility was to spend it on books. It was magical. And the wonderful thing about it was that I had absolute discretion. I had a great boss, and she trusted me. And the other collection development librarians, we all spent our year, each year, buying books, buying journals, buying databases. It was great. But there was one downside to it, and that was that people gave us things. People would give us money. They would go to the development office, and they would offer large amounts of money to the university, and the development office would say, "Why don't you give this to the library?" And they would go, "Well, great." And they would put restrictions on it. I had a fund for Armenian history. There are not $10,000 worth of books published each year in Armenian history. So at the end of the year, somehow I would have to account for that. I would have to spend it all in creative ways. I would have to come up with the report to send out to the donor saying what I'd spent it on. Other people simply gave us books. Now they would go into their basement. I mean, it seemed like they would go into their basement. They would decide, "Oh, I need to clean house." And they would come to a university with boxes of books, Barbara Cartland romance novels, moldy old calculus textbooks, and they would give them to us. And we would have to go through them and determine what made sense and what didn't, and then give them an accounting for it. It was the downside to what was generally a really great job. But it brought up this level of ingratitude. There were four of us in that department who wound up having to deal with this, and I did get to the point where I really disliked people giving. It was nice to have control, and then I wondered, or I've been wondering, as I've been sitting here for the past 4 or 5 days, where did that ingratitude come from? What was it about it? And you know, it's not the sort of thing that you have to have a profession to face. I'm sure all of us have had that birthday present from some aunt or uncle that you look at and go, oh. And then put it in the back of the closet somewhere until you can eventually get it to Morgan Memorial or some other place. What I used to find is that towards the end of the year, and April brings this up to me because this was close to the end of the fiscal year, and invariably we would have these meetings where we would sit around with the head of collection development, and she would pull out a spreadsheet and go, so, about that Smith account, have you spent that down yet? And I would feel this clench in my gut. I could almost feel my hands start to form fists. And looking back on it, it was a kind of protection. It was a sort of, I'm here, they're there. It's the sort of self and other that I wanted to protect myself against. And I think that's the source of ingratitude. It is for me. It's this notion that there are people out there giving and me not wanting to receive and the more I sit with it, the more I realize how ultimately silly that is. You know, when we chant during Sesshin, when we chant the meal service, I'm always struck by, now we set out Buddha's bowls, may we realize that all beings realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. It's giver and receiver and gift, you know, donor and collection development librarian and moldy books, they're all the same. There's trying to wall that off, trying to push it away, trying to make it something other is, well, it's not helpful. It's not that it's bad, it's not that it's good, it's just, it's not helpful. And at the same time, it's a part of us. This notion that that we are separate from other people. That's the delusion that we all wind up living with. And it's the delusion that when we recognize, then we are the Buddha. This morning's reading was really helpful that way. It's amazing to me how there are times when gifts come out of the ether and show up and Okamura's passage on Zazen, to realize delusion is to be a Buddha. Awakening to the incompleteness of our practice and returning to our path is the meaning of repentance, of atonement. Seeing that ingratitude and seeing it for what it is, and knowing that, you know, I will spend the rest of my life feeling gratitude and ingratitude, feeling thankful and unthankful, feeling a part of everything and feeling separate. I think that is sort of what I had wanted to say. I'd like to leave you all with something Dogen tells us that give even a phrase or a verse of the truth and it will be a wholesome seed for this and other lifetimes. One phrase that comes to me, a gift from Tom Waits that I think speaks to big mind versus small mind, that speaks to this feeling of inclusiveness, of opening up instead of that clenching, is a lyric from an old song of his that runs, "The large print giveth, and the small print taketh away." Thank you.
So we'll have our Dharma dialogue now. I'm Melissa.
Steve.
Fran.
Christine.
Marco.
Holly. Diane.
David. Ed.
Please be comfortable.
See, that's not clenching. That's good.
What?
I said, that's not clenching. That's
true. While you were speaking, I was formulating my question. Not a question, but it was just stuff was coming up for me, and I was like, oh, I could talk about that or that or that or everything. I want to talk about... how in my life I've received the message that gratitude can fix things and that you should be grateful and that will help somehow. And my sort of journey, I have been in group situations where people, you know, share a lot, and a lot of the time there's a "I'm grateful for blah blah blah," and sometimes it can get a little sickening. Like, yeah, right. And I've sort of done that too. And as I'm saying, "I'm grateful," blah 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 blah, I'm inwardly going, "Huh!" And there have been times where I've practiced gratitude, kept a journal and wrote down my gratitudes. And there have been times when I felt very fake about gratitude, and yet I agree that it is helpful, and it's not something that I can force. There is something more true. And sometimes it does come out in that little list, you know, and I don't do that list right now, but sometimes it shows up even in the rote and in the practice of gratitude. And sometimes it, yesterday someone used the word poignant, and it's, when someone's grateful to see me, and this little shoot of joy, you know, I don't know if I would call that gratitude, but maybe, you know, when I have the courage to speak in front of a group of people, I'm kind of grateful for that. And it's exciting. The fake joy, there's just something behind that. The effort behind that, there's something behind that.
I think you bring up such a good point about this. So many of these things, so gratitude being one, there's something true about it, and yet it's very tricky to practice it. And I love how, you know, you name that we can force ourselves or try to force ourselves to be grateful, and it's not helpful. But yet, moving in that direction, like we are all so unconscious of how we're supported by everyone and everything. You know, the little self makes up the story. Well, I'm the only one that works really hard, or, you know, I have to do it myself. Why doesn't, you know, and it's such a delusion. But if we practice gratitude with militancy, it doesn't really help. Yeah.
Can I say something more?
Yes.
It's best to bow down when someone speaks ill of you. I'm not grateful when someone speaks ill of me. You know, it's tricky. You know, but you know, you get the sometimes the message is, well, thank them. They're teaching. You know, it's just right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is hard.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed by your naming this the way you have, all the different aspects of it, and the emotion with which you're bringing it forward. Because my feeling is that when we're not congruent, there's a deep feeling of unease that we carry around. And if we keep getting the message, be this, be that, do this, do that, that's a recipe for that kind of incongruence. And some of us will just say, okay, if you say so. And something inside gets sick. And I mean, in the sense that you're saying, sickening, like, ugh, but also, like, it's really a wounding that begins to really become very established. So I really want to reflect that back to you, that this practice is not about doing things because people tell us that this is what we should be doing. This practice is about letting the way be the way, you know, really allowing that process to happen. And then when gratitude arises, it's very different from the one that we, as David said, we militaristically tried. Because when you force something, there's force in it. When it naturally arises, it's that gushy thing. You're going like, oh, hello, hi. It's so simple. Yeah. And I just want to maybe add a coda to this, I'm not sure that text, who's that by? It's best to bow down. Tori Zenchi. I'm not sure he's asking us to be grateful.
Yeah, <I'm> just,
right. We add that on because it's a cultural thing. But this bowing down is a huge practice. I was reading Katagiri on bowing and doing the gassho. That's the whole of zazen, just like Shigantaza says the whole of zazen. There's some way that we go, okay, yes, and I think that might be more of it. So I would say that it's best to bow down to the feeling of being sickened by force and gratitude. That's a better example. Yeah, you understand.
Yeah. So I feel like I'd like to say a word in support of forcing. Because I think there's a fine balance here. I mean, there's there's faking, which is, you know, not what we want to do. We don't want to pretend to feel something that we don't. But there's also this, it's not just letting it be the way it is either. It's being willing to examine, you know, and look at, well, you know, how am I in relation to gratitude? You know, am I paying attention to the gifts that I'm being given and responding appropriately? And I think that's a wonderful question to have, and I think it is a helpful thing for us to contemplate. And unfortunately for me, the answer that always comes up around this sort of thing is I see where I'm falling short. You're very ungrateful, Stephen. You're getting all these wonderful gifts, and here you are not receiving them, and blah 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 blah. And then my mind starts going, and so that's the danger, I think, of that is that, you know, I need to try and, you know, if you go looking, you're gonna find, you know, and to be gentle about.
You're going to find what? If you go looking, you're going to find.
You're going to find falling short. You know, yeah. if you examine, you know, your attitude towards gratitude, you're going to find, well, you know, I'm not a lot of the time. You know, and to not use the falling short as just a way to beat myself up. You know, to be able to look at it and say, oh yeah, you know, you're falling short there. You know, it might be nice to do a little something, you know, and not get caught, but not go to the other side of, you know, not paying attention either.
Well, and it reminds me of Uchiyama's vow and repentance, because there is something in our practice where we do vow to be kind and to appreciate this incredible treasure we've been given, and that there is something important in that direction. And then the repentance is when we actually look and see, well, how am I doing? Well, not so good today. And to be able to say, wow, yeah, I'm lost in the usual place, or I'm here. You know, I forgive myself, and how do I turn toward it? Turn toward what we love, whatever that is. But it's the kindness towards ourself. And I think, so Tori Zenji also says, how can we be ungrateful to anyone or anything? Well, it's very easy. I don't see what the problem is.
We just heard the talk about that. It's very clear in the talk. Let's get a moldy book here. Yeah,
yeah.
It's already happened many times. We get lots of gifts of moldy books.
To appreciate the timing of that. So when I'm sick, when I have the flu, and someone says, oh, this must be really great for your practice. They don't pull that shit on me. So there's something about timing.
Yeah.
So in some ways, yes, everything that comes, we can use it. And things that when they're happening, we think this is the absolute worst thing in the world. Sometimes I look back and say, you know, how blessed was I that, you know, but to say in the moment, you should be grateful. That's not the work. The work of this moment is, you know, I feel crappy, you know, or, you know, I don't want these moldy books. I don't know why that comes up.
Because of the wonderful smell.
Isn't that an old song? So take off your moldy books and stay with us. I would just turn that just a little tiny bit, a little, because I don't think that everything can be used, but I think that we can be used by everything. I just want to switch that. What I mean by that is that sometimes, I think James Cordova referred to this in his talk, you know, that another cliche of God only gives you what you can handle, right? You know, I think sometimes we're just torn apart and we're little puddles on the floor. And I mean, I think that's what I mean by being used. And that, right? You know, and it's and then you can go into that stream that you're pointing to, Steve, of beating yourself up about it. But there's a way, I think, that Zazen allows us to have the experience again and again of being used by life. You know, that there's a way that when I'm in pain on the cushion and I don't move, I learn something about being almost used up or destroyed by that pain. And then, you know, the bell rings and I get up and it's not there anymore. Of course, this is the caveat. If it's there after the bell rings, then you probably should change the way you're sitting. But you know, these things or the emotional pain, to really let ourselves be used by the world. And this is in the spirit of Dogen as well. Not to go out and do it. I think you were pointing to that. But there is a way of learning to receive. And out of that, I think a different kind of gratitude grows. I won't say any more right now, but it's important for me. Yeah,
for me, that gratitude often, maybe always, comes after the point of being used up.
Yeah.
But... gosh, you know, I don't know if I can think of a time that I haven't felt grateful afterwards for being torn apart or used up. Or,
but not in the moment, and you didn't make it happen.
No.
Yeah. And but you know, the other thing, just to Steve's point, is that part of these teachings point us in this direction. There is a gentle encouragement. I loved that word. You know, that we, there is another life than the oh fuck life. Mm-hmm. Right, there is the life of, oh, what is this? That kind of little wondering. I think it's really important to know that there are pointers. But then there's a heavy hand of some well-meaning people who are trying to teach us to be better. Mm-hmm. Right, and it's a heavy hand.
Mm-hmm. Christy?
They occurred to me when you know, be better. It's like on the word Christians. I have a question. Being here, I shared. I recognized how much of my life has been incongruent, pushing myself around and making things happen and letting things arise, and how good that feels. And there's a quote that I, when I found it by Eleanor Roosevelt, that I've has helped me so much rise to the occasion, which is, you must do the thing you think you cannot do. And there's a real big difference inside of me when I live by that, as opposed to the militaristic incongruence that just makes me want to weep, and it feels sickening inside. And that quote, I actually had on a coffee cup. Someone gave it to me because I had that quote. Is what got me here Sunday when I didn't want to come. So what's the difference between those two energies? They're so different.
Well, I like what you say about how different your experience is.
Yeah.
I think they're near cousins, or they can look the same, but this spirit, you know, if we use it open-handed, or maybe it goes to what, you know, are we using it to punish ourselves with, or as some kind of aspiration to allow us? Because certainly it takes great courage and great determination to sit here, even for 25 minutes, you know, but to walk toward what we love requires everything. Mm-hmm. But we want to give it. Right? For me, when I walk that direction, that's what Melissa was talking about, this alignment. I feel, this is my heart. I will die for this.
Yeah.
Happily.
What I love.
Yeah. And the other feels like somebody else telling me I'm not good enough, and I just have to, you know. But I think for you, you've named it already, it feels totally different.
Yeah.
We know it.
Get why?
And the word, I mean, the word itself, to me, presupposes that that I own or something, or that it's mine to give. And I can only look at death and passing of life and to know that it really things, and I don't mean just material things, but everything passes through. And it's been poignant. There's that word, by the way. It's been poignant because my parents have been are elderly, and they have been talking a lot about giving their things away, you know. And it's just, for me, it's just been a, I don't care. I just want more of you. And, but, you know, those things, it just makes it clear that nothing is yours to give. It's sort of passing through. I guess that's the way I'm trying to.
Yeah.
I think you're really pointing to Dogen's meaning here. And he says this off and on throughout the text, that there isn't anything that's ours. This is not a personal, small self. I have this thing and I'm going to give it. It's the flowers on the distant mountain that we're giving. That they don't belong to us. You know, everything's on loan. Truly.
And I think that we give by not holding on. So it's not about an object from here to there, but this non-greed. So we give our practice to our practice, and we can, and it's almost like it is this natural flow, that the only problem is our thinking that we're separate, or that there's something else. Well, I need to give something to my parents, or I need to give something to my kids. You know, but this is the natural, this is the flow that we are. There is nothing that is not already freely given. But, and so, and Okamura says that too, you know, this great realization, we are always a part of it that is effortlessly functioning. And yet the whole world changes when, with a hair's breadth, when we can step into really, then there's no problem. There's no giving or receiving or gift, as you said. So yeah, right to the point, I think.
I have a very elderly mother, too, who also is very focused on her things. but I think that because she sees herself in a lot of ways in those things, that wanting to give those is a way of giving herself. So to see it that way, rather than, you know, the antique chest or whatever it is that she supposed.
And I was just so touched, I almost can't say it about it. I said, I just want more of your pins. So beautiful. So, it does feel like the gratitude is not something I can generate. You know, the gratitude comes from the universe. You know, so nothing I can do. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, that's probably a wonderful place to end.
Thank you.